Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Robot Attack. My name is Scouterswan5, and welcome. We are a gaming podcast. We talk about games and all sorts of stuff, but sometimes we bring fundraising aspects into it because fundraising and gaming go together very well. Of course, I'm here with Beskar Snake, of course. Hello, how are you?
Not too bad. You know, good to see everybody again.
So. Yeah, and then we have a special guest bringing back Sally from WDC. Can you explain your role again for everyone?
Yes. So my name is Sally. I work for WDC, Whale and Dolphin Conservation, which is the leading global charity dedicated to protecting whales and dolphins. And I am the head of digital partnerships there. So I manage the team responsible for raising funds and awareness and engaging with gamers, streamers, game developers, raising all that good awareness and funds to keep our work going through games, which has become a big funder of our work. So we now have a team for it, which is amazing.
Fantastic. Yeah, Sally has been on here before, but we just wanted to do another revamp. A different, I think last time we talked was Jingle Jam. We'll kind of direct these questions for event that just literally ended. Well, ended, mm-hmm. ending, called World Ocean Event. So we'll kind of touch on that shortly. But we always start with what games have we played recently? Sally, we'll start with you. What games have you played?
Well, I've dipped my toes in quite a few different games over the last week because of the aforementioned World Ocean Day event. So we did stream quite a lot over our channel. And the two of the games that I really enjoyed that I took part in, one was called Bathhouse Creatures, which is a really small indie game. If you've seen Spirited Away, it's basically like that crossed with Stardew Valley in a way, because you're kind of managing a little bathhouse and you have all these creatures like ducks and capybaras and dogs coming in, and you have to, you know, get them in. You can decorate the bathhouse with like different items that appeal to the different creatures, and there is a frog in the sauna that keeps the steam going, and that was probably my favorite part. And then the other game that I really enjoyed recently was a game called Naiad, and it's like a beautiful it almost kind of looks like papercraft or like watercolor. It's hard to explain like the look of it, but it's like really beautiful, colorful game where you are a water nymph flowing through the river, and it's kind of like Abzu in a way where you don't really get any instruction at the start and you're just told to just go, and you kind of explore and things unfold around you as you're continuing through the different river levels and experiencing different puzzles and collecting things. And yeah, really sweet, really nice music as well.
Fantastic. And then Beskar Snake, what have you been playing?
I mean, actually kind of thrown for a little bit of a loop here, not really, but Ready or Not, I know I talked about that one in the last one, been playing a little bit more of that. Vampire Survivors, kind of got a little bit back into that, just something to pick up quick and play just a little bit. But the big one, Clair Obscur Expedition 33.
Oh yeah,
for
still.
Anyone who has not seen it, oh my goodness. That game is just awesome. I've always been a fan of RPGs and just that genre and that style of game, but this one, they just knocked it out of the park. It's been everywhere, and a lot of people have been talking about it and playing it and streaming it and all that, so there's not much more I can say past what has already been said about it, but it's just still incredible, really fun. A really good way to bring back the turn-based kind of elements that a lot of specifically Final Fantasy fans, which I'm a big Final Fantasy fan, have been kind of missing in the past few games that they've had. I still love Final Fantasy 16, 15. It wasn't a bad game in my opinion, but getting back into a really good RPG with really good elements along with a really good story is just really nice to see. So I hope that moving forward, I don't necessarily want to see Final Fantasy go in that direction, like mirror it one for one, but I would like to see them maybe take some elements of it and kind of incorporate back into getting back into that RPG space. So yeah, that one is taken up most of my time in gaming, and I'm absolutely proud to say it. So
nice. To go on Sally's comments of I played also games that were through the Steam sale through WDC. One was the True Detective, I believe. Yeah, that was good. It was very comical in terms of like a lot of references, like we can't tell you the password from Jurassic Park, and it's like a cute little silly detective. It's kind of more of like you find pieces and then you like unlock stuff, or you find a key to unlock the door. So it's kind of like point and click. It didn't seem like really kind of intuitive that you need to, unless I didn't get to the hard levels yet. And then I picked up Gordlets, that was also on sale through the WDC. That was really, it's a little cute little pixelated game. It's also Twitch integrated. That was really cute and really fun. And another Crab's Treasure. Of course, that was on sale that I already picked up, but in the past through WDC, I think through the past sale. But yeah, those were really fun to play throughout the week, to play different games, because as Duskar Snake and everyone else is aware, to play Trackmania and Sea of Thieves, so I needed to switch it off with like go back to my roots, to indie games. But yeah. So anyways,
I'm excited about Gordlets.
Yeah, I also
got Gordlets in the sale. I've got it downloaded. This week off I've got coming up is going to be playing all the games I bought in the sale.
Yeah.
And catching up all the other games that I just haven't had a chance to play yet.
There's one I missed on the sale because I didn't know if the sticker game was, the DLC was on sale. I knew the sticker game was on sale.
It was just the base game.
So I was like, yeah, I don't know. I'll wait till another time. But yeah, obviously the bulk of these questions, we'll get to the main topic, is about WDC again. So that's why we're here with Sally to go over some questions that we might have missed or like updates. So I'll start. So like what updates do you have from WDC that have to try to make an impact for whales and dolphins, like any like major legislation that you have in the UK that, you know, helping out dolphins? Or I know we just finished Jingle Jam, but we also finishing so like what is there anything like major updates from you guys that you could like highlight from the past like past podcasts, I guess, but that's a broad statement, but I guess the most recent things that you could like touch on.
I actually was having a good think about this, because it's a really good question, because there's so many different things that happen, you know, some small, some large, but we've actually had two quite big things happen since the last podcast, actually quite recently. One is that there will be no fin whale hunting in Iceland this year. Yay. Which is incredible. So even though we had that massive disappointment of them renewing the licenses indefinitely when we thought that they were going to be, you know, gone for good, the last remaining fin whale hunting company in Iceland, they, even though they have the ability to get their licenses for this year and the next year and the next, they have announced that they're not going to this year. So for now, again, no more fin whale hunting in Iceland, which is amazing. It's a huge win because, you know, if anyone who's been following WDC's work, Iceland and hunting has been a huge area of work for us over the last decade. And we've seen amazing success from Iceland being one of the most predominantly, the biggest whaling nation in the world, to only having one whaling company left. The majority of the Icelandic population is now against whaling. There is a thriving whale watching industry in Iceland. So, you know, conservation is a slow process, but if we keep going at it, we can see those successes. So it's amazing to know that, you know, those few hundred whales are going to be living safely from the harpoons this year, which is really, really cool. And another one more close to home for the UK is quite recent, actually, and that is the UK government is considering a ban on bottom trawling in marine protected areas, which is kind of nuts to think that bottom trawling is even allowed in marine protected areas. But There's nearly 200 MPAs in UK waters that are supposed to bring protections to the marine life that are in those areas, but bottom trawling is still a thing that is allowed in some of those. And I haven't seen it yet, but I know that there is this apparently quite harrowing piece of footage in the new David Attenborough Ocean film all about bottom trawling. And bottom trawling is basically these huge nets that they scrape along the bottom of the seafloor and just catch and scrape anything in its path. And it's extremely destructive. And obviously accidental capture of non-target species is going to be a huge issue because they are indiscriminately just suctioning up what they can off the seafloor. But at the moment, the UK government is now considering banning bottom trawling in, I think, up to 40 of those marine protected areas. And we've got colleagues, this week just gone, we've had some colleagues at the UN Ocean Conference in France, kind of pushing for those changes to be made and raising awareness of the terrible devastation that bottom trawling causes to not just whales and dolphins, but all marine life. And, you know, with the way that carbon is cycled in the ocean, a lot of carbon is locked away in the seafloor. So when you disturb all that, you're kind of disturbing carbon, and it increases the potential for carbon to kind of be released back into the atmosphere. So yeah, that's a big thing that they're considering it, and it could possibly lead to a ban, which is amazing.
That's great. Follow-up question, I guess, like, now that the first ban that you mentioned, how do you like maintain that pressure of like maintaining it being banned, is just like keeping it hopefully like conversations with them or with like legislation?
Yeah, I mean, we have colleagues at WDC who are dedicated to lobbying governments and writing reports. We're a very data and science-led organisation, so we do a lot of desk-based research and data gathering, and then we use that to write reports that are then presented to Parliament and other kind of governing bodies, depending on what the issue is, to be a part of that voice. We also join coalitions of other NGOs, so all, you know, gathering together as that one strong voice to say we should stop this. And then depending on the process, it could go down to, you know, parliamentary vote. It's all about getting those members of parliament on side to support your cause. It's a lot of conversations.
Yeah. Well, thank you for doing all that. And thank your team and you and everyone involved. I'm sure it's a lot. So we'll just touch on, since we talked about in the first part of this first one we started, is talking about how video games and fundraising. So it's maybe now, since I typed this out, it might be changed, but like it's roughly 2 years for Games for Waves. We kind of touched on this a little bit from last time, but like what kind of things do you have planned for the upcoming year? I know that now Jingle Jam is not doing it this year for you guys. So I know. So what kind of things in the upcoming future to maybe overcome that Jingle Jam, now that, you know, you're not selected, for example, that maybe make up for it, or anything involved with the Games for Waves community?
Yeah, I mean, we're not selected for Jingle Jam this year, but it doesn't mean we won't be, you know, in years to come. So we've got a great relationship with the Jingle Jam guys, and everyone has to apply for it each year. Right. And we'll definitely be applying next year, and we'll see what happens. And we've had a great history with Jingle Jam. I mean, they've funded a huge amount of our work up till now, which is incredible. So we're super grateful for the support that they give us. But it does mean that, like you say, we won't have Jingle Jam this year, but we can look at other news and opportunities. And as you know, we launched our first horror event last year, Orcatober, for October. And we've just got some big ideas and big plans to really grow Orcatober this year and in the future. So last year it was just a streaming event, but I'm hoping that we can maybe look into getting some games involved, whether it's going to be like a Steam sale or Humble Bundle or, you know, something to get some games involved, getting some more devs and publishers taking part, because one thing about this year's World Ocean Day event is we had quite a few horror games in our Steam sale. So we've got quite a few horror devs that are interested in Orcatober already, which is really, really nice. So I'm super excited to see what Orcatober is going to be this year. We met so many amazing content creators at TwitchCon the other week, a lot of whom were big horror streamers. So yeah, we're looking to try and make it another big streaming festival like we do for World Ocean Day, which is super exciting. And with our crowd control integration, it's just perfect match for horror games, getting people getting super scared for whales and dolphins. So yeah, that's kind of like our big focus going forward, is growing Orcatober.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah. Sorry, what, Beskar?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I think we've got a good follow-up question for that with Steam and Humble Bundle. If, you know, you mentioning that looking for Steam sales, Humble Bundle, just kind of getting into those, how do you kind of start to bridge those relationships? How do you approach those different organizations? Do they seek you out? How do you kind of build that relationship to get, hey, we want to do this and we want to highlight these games and everything. And how do you get that kind of rolling?
It's very much a mixture of both me reaching out and people finding us and reaching out. We've been, because we're kind of 2.5 years into our Games for Waves initiative now, we've got a really nice foundation and discoverability. So our socials are quite have grown quite a lot. We do, WDC has been working with the games industry for over 10 years. It wasn't really until 2023 when we decided to kind of officially recognize everything that the games and streaming spaces have done for us with the Games for Waves brand. But we've always been working with the games industry for a very long time. And we've got some amazing ambassadors in different games companies who support us. Big, big advocates who love the ocean, love whales and dolphins, and want to use their positions in those games companies to support us. So a lot of it is networking, who you know, being introduced to people. I tend to go to a lot of the game dev conferences, like GDC, Gamescom, Develop Brighton. It's a lot of it is about making those connections and nurturing those connections by, you know, like how we work with our community. We provide them with fun opportunities to support us, and then we feed back on the impact that that has made on our work, that tangible impact on whales and dolphins that, you know, by supporting us with your game sales or by streaming for us, you can then see directly kind of where that money has made an impact on our work. So yeah, we've got a long history of working with the games industry, which has really helped build that foundation. And then once Games for Waves was really launched and set up, it really then gave us that kind of spearhead to approach more people. But we're also much more discoverable now. People do reach out to us a lot more, which is really nice to see that, you know, our work is getting there, getting out there to people without us always having to find and reach out to them. So yeah, it is a mixture of both. And we've been a humble partner, humble charity partner for a long, long time. And yeah, working with Steam for a long time. So we've been very lucky to, my people before me, before I worked at WDC, kind of set those seeds going as well. So it's a mixture of everything. And a lot of work.
I can't even begin. I wouldn't even know where to start. Like, who would I email? So yeah, building those connections, I can't even imagine the amount of time and effort and work that takes.
Especially, you can't just be like, hey, we're WDC. Can you give us Steam codes and do you have a portion of your sale?
Can we just have money? I don't think that question just is the best approach to it.
No, I mean, we always take the approach that, I mean, with everything that we do, it's a partnership. So it's a two-way street. So we have to offer something back to our partners, and, you know, whether that is visibility on their games being promoted in a new way that they wouldn't necessarily be able to get on their own. sharing keys with our streaming community. Having streamers play games is really valuable to game devs and publishers to see, you know, for that visibility on their game. But also there is the element of being nice and goodwill and knowing that you just want to help a charity. I think a reason why we've been so successful in the games space is because gaming and streaming, the people in these communities are some of the most passionate and generous people. That's why these communities exist. They all kind of have the same things that they love, and there's so many people out there that really love whales and dolphins or really love the ocean or are super passionate about protecting the environment. It's you just got to find those advocates, and they do seem to be everywhere, which is really surprising but nice.
Glad to see it's growing as well. It's not a shrinking concept. It's really kind of getting out there and branching out and expanding more into the gaming space.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're also expanding more into kind of content creators in general. So, you know, you may have seen that we've been working with Mcroft quite a few times recently, who's a big body painter in the UK. There's other, like, streaming isn't just games. Streamers stream all different types of content, and we're not kind of only games. We may be called Games for Waves, but we are. Anyone can stream and create content with us and support WDC through their passions. So it's just nice to see. I think it's the community that is the thing that ties everything together.
This is obviously, you don't have to use this. It just came into my brain. You just mentioned, you know, other forms. What about contents for currents? Just saying, you know, just maybe more alliteration in there, you know.
Yeah.
A subset of that.
Yeah. But, oh, my cat's about to crash the thing. No, he's going down. Off he goes. Yeah, okay. Sometimes he walks across the stream and like waves his tail in my face, but he's just leaving. So
more cat.
We just have all the animals. Sometimes we have animals to show here. It works perfectly, at least with this one.
Because
we're supporting. It fits in, you know. Yeah. Support all animals.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned also like with these events like Jingle Jam, or obviously the most recent one that's ending, World Ocean Event, how do you select those specific items of like for World Ocean Event, there was entanglements in the ocean and stuff, and that's what you decided this event goes to. So how do you make that determination on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mixture of kind of what are our goals as an organization, what we're really looking to achieve each year in across the various program areas that we have. With World Ocean Day in particular, because it's World Ocean Day and not like World Whale Day or Dolphin Day, it's the ocean. And one of our biggest program areas is our Safe Seas program, which covers all of the work we do to prevent accidental entanglements, pollution, working on offshore industries, vessel strikes, you know, making the ocean a safe space for not just whales and dolphins, but for all marine life. And bycatch or accidental entanglement in fishing gear is the biggest killer of whales and dolphins. More than 300,000 whales and dolphins die in nets every year. And it's even more for seabirds, turtles, sharks. You know, it's a huge accidental side effect of the fishing industry. And so it made sense that World Ocean Day, we want to tackle the biggest threat. So let's put all of what, you know, let's select projects that help reduce entanglements for whales, dolphins, and other marine life through our World Ocean Day event. So last year it was funded a project in Sri Lanka to work with gill net fisheries. And gill nets are basically walls of net that hang in the ocean, and then anything that swims into it gets caught. And so we're working with tuna fisheries in Sri Lanka to help them alter their gear so that they can still fish, because we're not anti-fishing at WDC. We appreciate that there are billions of people around the globe that rely on fishing and rely on the ocean for their main source of food, protein or income. So we can't just tell people to stop fishing without providing any kind of practical alternative. And in some cases, it's not, there is no alternative. So it's more about helping them adjust the way that they do what they do so that they can still earn their living, get their food, feed their families, but it's not affecting non-target species. So if you're a tuna fishery, you ideally only want to be catching tuna and not entangling turtles and seabirds and whales and dolphins and sharks and rays and everything else that happens. So yeah, we're working with these fisheries in Sri Lanka to just try out different methods. So we're trying like putting them in different depths in the ocean so that, you know, can certain species would, that, because different species swim in different kind of ranges of depths in the ocean. So if you just lower your nets or move them out slightly out of the range of certain species, we're also experimenting with LED lights that kind of flicker to deter certain species that will be averted by those lights. So once we find out the most successful method, it's scalable, you know, you can then roll that out for other fisheries in other areas. So we've done that quite successfully with other fisheries in different parts of the world, like creel fishers in Scotland who do, so creels are like the lobster pots, essentially. We've done a really successful project there where the rope that connects the baskets, and they go on for kilometres, these baskets, these ropes with baskets every kind of few metres or so, but that rope that connects them floats up into the water column, and that's what like minkies and humpbacks and basking sharks get caught in. But we swapped that rope out for a weighted one that sits on the seafloor. So the fishers can still catch their lobsters and their crabs, but the water is free from these loops of rope. And it was a huge success. And, you know, it could save up to 30 minke whales a year from being entangled. So we know that this model of just altering and adjusting the fishing gear types can work. And it's just then making that work for all the different types of fishing gear, because there are many different types. So last year's World Ocean Day was all about that project in Sri Lanka. And this year's World Ocean Day is all about a slightly different type of entanglement. It's in ghost gear, which is lost and discarded and abandoned fishing gear that's not under control of the fisher anymore. So it's just, you know, anytime a rope snaps or a net breaks or gets snagged on some reefs or wrecks under the ocean, and then it's just kind of like stuck there floating in the water, or big balls of like netting and ropes and hooks and lines, everything that's just there uncontrolled and capturing anything that happens to get in its way. So we've identified a really exciting project with this organization in the UK that finds and locates these this ghost gear and removes it from the sea and disposes of it appropriately. And then we're also funding our marine pollution coordinator, who actually came on one of our streams last week to talk about all the work that she does. She kind of works in the background trying to get legislation passed to make it free and accessible at harbours for fishers to be able to dispose of their gear appropriately, because a lot of the time there's no facilities for fishers, or they have to pay out of their own pocket to dispose of it. So there's a lot of barriers for fishers, because they don't want to lose their gear. It's expensive kit, and they try and repair it as many times as they can before they have to get rid of it. But if it breaks, and then they know that they're going to have to fork out thousands of pounds to haul it in and dispose of it, they're more likely to leave it there, even though they don't really want to. So it's not the fisher's fault. They just don't have any facilities to help them with it. So yeah, it's kind of like a immediate fix of funding these divers to bring out as much as they can find around UK seas while we work on trying to get that policy change so that it's not a thing anymore in the future.
I have to say, it's unfortunate that it has to be explored, but it is really neat to hear the ideas and the thoughts that you guys are coming up with to combat this, like the weighted rope. That's not even something that I would think, you know. I've seen, of course, you know, you see shows like Deadliest Catch and some of the other ones, and you think, oh yeah, I'm sure they, you know, cause all this, but not even thinking just the rope itself, something that seems completely innocuous, something that seems completely, I would think as somebody who is ignorant, you know, it's a non-issue. It just, oh, it's not in the way or anything, but it does have that effect. So to think of, oh, if we put this in a different place, that can have such a massive impact, or even the lights for the nets, I wouldn't think, oh, well, hey, we can just try to steer some of the other species away and everything by kind of deterring them. And that's just, like I said, sorry, I was just kind of focused on that. It was just really neat to hear sort of where technology is and
you how kind to work of, with that. Sometimes the solution is really simple because, again, when I first, when we first started on the Scottish Creole project, and the solution was just weight the ropes down. I was like, well, of course, that's so simple. Why didn't we, you know, hasn't that always been a thing? But one thing that I really love about the Creole project in particular is because we're working with the fishers, they're actively involved in like leading the project. So they have that agency as well in terms of them making that change. And we're just kind of funding the replacement of their gear. And then they trialed out all different types of ropes, the way they're woven differently, to make sure that it's as easy as a closer switch as possible to what they normally use, so it doesn't affect the way that they can fish. So that I think that was really, really cool to have the fishers like actively involved and, you know, on board with it. And we had a similar project a few years ago with the Maui dolphin. They are the world's smallest dolphin. If you look up a picture, they're really cute. Their babies are about as big as an American football. And yeah, teeny tiny little dolphins, the Maui's dolphin and the Hector's dolphin. They live in New Zealand only. They're a New Zealand endemic species and they're super cute, but they're highly at risk of entanglements in fishing gear. And the solution that we had was that, well, their range around the coast, they're very coastal dolphins. Just move your nets a few miles out. You can still catch what you need to catch, but you're no longer in their habitat. And we were successful in getting some areas of the coastline to kind of make it a law that they had to have their nets out of the range of the Maori dolphin habitats. And, you know, there's only, I think, like 57 of them left kind of thing. So it was like a real big project for us to try and get some better protections for them. But even just moving where the nets are can just be the solution to it.
Simple solution.
I safely need one of these things. It's awesome.
Best Carson now cute. Found his favorite animal.
It's new. Yeah, they're like blue and yellow. They're like colorful and they're cute and small and yeah.
I need somebody to take care of it and safely and all that. But I need one. I have to.
That's well, go to New Zealand and go whale watching, and maybe you'll spot one.
All right, sorry, I gotta go. I gotta play. We're going to New Zealand. Road trip. I guess not really road trip, boat trip.
Yeah.
No, that's awesome. Well, and even similar, like another thing that just kind of stuck, like you mentioned about like specifically tuna fisheries. They don't want all of that other marine life and stuff, because I'm sure that cost them money, not only in damage, but in now they've got to try to remove that and everything. So even with what you guys are doing, that's helping them to be more efficient, so that can, you know, keep them getting, like you said, protein to people and jobs for people. And, you know, maybe they don't have to raise their prices up as much because they don't have as much damaged equipment, or they don't have as much loss in the terms of getting things outside of tuna. So even those maybe unpredicted impacts that you guys are having to help those industries as well, just like I said, be more efficient, to whereas if now they're catching 98% tuna versus, oh, we have all this other stuff that's filling up our nets. If you can help them with that, that's just, like I said, one of those maybe unintended benefits.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the economic impacts of entanglement and bycatch is huge, particularly with ghost gear, because, you know, the time it takes to have to repair and replace gear, the time it takes to repair and replace vessels that are damaged, because if a boat drives over a big clump of floating discarded lines and nets and it gets caught up in their propeller, that sucker could either be like a day, a week, a month out trying to fix it, or completely having to replace your vessel. There are huge economic impacts on it, and then that has a knock-on effect on like the demand and supply chain on everything. So it's there's a lot of kind of arguments why we need to do this, and that's kind of part of the package of what we're trying to do on the kind of policy side of things, with engaging with governments and harbour authorities and net manufacturers and everything. Is like, you know, it's not just for the good of the whales and the dolphins and the other marine species, but it's like, it will help you too, because you will save money.
No, that's again, the things that you don't think about when you're not directly involved with that. And just that, you know, I see the organization, I go, oh, sweet, you're helping marine life. That's absolutely important. But then, yeah, not knowing kind of those hidden benefits that just stack up behind and make it even more of an impact, and even better for not only the industries, but also just kind of the populace and the community as a whole. Yeah, because unfortunately, like you said, I'm sure that it's not as simple as, oh, we just put a little patch on the boat here. You know, you lose your propeller, you get a big rip in your hull or something. Yeah, that's going to take time. And that's not just we'll put a piece of flex tape on it and we'll just keep going back out, you know, and you're back at that's it. That's a lot of damage. Thank you. No, it's true. You know, yeah, there are certain things that are maybe a quick, easy fix. You know, you always think of the hole in a hydro dam, you know, and you plug it with your finger, you know. Yeah, but if that hole is now this massive gash, yeah, you now have that fishing vessel that's completely out of commission, or might even become another wreck and become more of that ghost gear because you lose more equipment and all that. Mm-hmm. So no, that's really cool. That's awesome.
Nice. We've got one more question, but I think how do you see gaming role in like climate activism involving like over time? I know I was actually astonished with forgot her name, but she was on Games for Waves Twitch with you. I learned a lot, actually.
Oh, the stream on Wednesday.
Yeah.
With Pina. Yeah.
Yeah. So like, do you see like more streams like that, or like how do you, you know, give to the gaming role, whether it's streamers or whether it's the game industry, gaming's role in climate activism? Like how do you feel like that will grow?
Yeah, I mean, I think the answer to that is something that we've touched on throughout this, is community. Like, streamers have their own communities that they, you know, stream to. But then games companies also have communities of people who love specific games. And together, you've got these little loudspeakers of people all talking to big groups of people who then talk to other people who then talk to other people. And it's about sharing that knowledge and that education and that, you know, inspiring others through what you've learned to speak to other people. And it's that community that I think is really going to help. So with us working with streamers and gamers, you know, we do like what we did last week for our World Ocean Day event. We brought on some of our policy experts on stream to play some games, but also to have that Q&A kind of opportunity for our community to ask questions straight to the expert doing the work that is going to be funded and learn some things. And then hopefully that means that you then take that knowledge on. Maybe you're inspired enough to then talk about it to your own community or to other people, your friends and your family. And then the same on the kind of games industry side of things, where we're working with specific games, with our like DLC partnerships or our game partnerships. So like the game Loddlenaut that we're partnered on is obviously very themed around collecting ocean waste and stuff, but it's a cute, fun game. But through that is kind of indirectly teaching you and inspiring you to, you know, recycle, essentially, which is a huge thing. And I think the role of community is the best way for us to really spread that awareness, because education, once you know about something, then you know kind of about that thing. So like, education and awareness raising is a really big part of our anti-captivity work, because a lot of it is about, as soon as you know about the awful experience that whales and dolphins have whilst in captivity, you then know not to go to a whale and dolphin show or captive facility in the future. But until you know that, you're none the wiser, and educating about, you know, using reusable shopping bags and bottles and straws and things. Once you know about it, you can make those changes that affect the environment positively. Once you know that going whale watching is a really great way to see whales and dolphins in person without funding an industry of captivity, once you know about that, you can then make those actions to do that. And it's all about education then leads to behavior change, which is a really important part of fixing a lot of these issues.
Fantastic. Oh, yeah, I always am astonished to talk about whale poop now. It's great.
Yes.
And how it helps out the environment. But no, like when you brought the her in, I was just like, I was learning so much. I'm like, oh, they sell these bags that prevent in the washing machine that prevent.
Yes.
So that was, I know someone in the community asked about it again. So it's like now I could carry that to my community, to other people. Exactly. To say, this is some stuff that you could buy at home. Or like, I didn't even.
Until you know something exists, you're not going to know it exists. Right, so then you're not going to be able to do the thing, you know? So it's all about that.
And especially the like, oh, keep plastic forks and like reuse them. I like as simple as that. I'm like, I didn't even think about that. Like, I could be doing that and save plastic and instead of throwing it away and reusing new ones. I should wash them and reuse them instead of throwing them away until like they break or whatever. Then recycle them. But yeah, cool. I lied. There's one more question I didn't ask last time. But what Beskar? Sorry.
Oh no, I was just saying liar. I was just calling.
Yeah,
you liar.
What is
calling you out,
Sally? What is, and we could ask Beskar, what is your favorite marine animal?
Okay, I mean, I'm sure you probably know because I talk about it all the time. If someone ever asks me, I really love sperm whales. Okay. I think they are amazing. I do love, like, I love octopus as well because I think they are very similar reasons. They look like aliens. They're very intelligent and they're kind of weird.
Yeah.
And I like those kinds. They're all my favorite kind of like sea creatures are the weird ones. If you've ever seen a mola mola or a sunfish, they're also incredible. They are the biggest boned fish because all sharks have cartilage, not bones. Mm. So the sunfish has the biggest, is the biggest fish with bones. It's very heavy and it's huge and it's like flat and have two big fins.
Yeah.
And they're just weird and cool. And I don't know why I like them. But sperm whales are amazing because they're these huge, enormous whales. Very intelligent, but highly emotional. They have these wonderful, like, family groups that they stay with forever. They sleep vertically. So if you Google sleeping sperm whales, it looks like a scene from a sci-fi film because they're kind of just these vertical thing, oblongs in the, suspended in the water. And that's them. They sleep all together, but one will stay semi-awake to protect its family.
Aww.
And they only eat giant squid. And giant squid live in the really dark depths of the ocean where there's no light. Mm. And so they go, they dive really deep for a long time and they hunt these giant squids with their clicks. They do clicking sonar to hunt them. And they have these epic battles in the pitch black. And so a lot of the times you see sperm whales with these like gnarly scars all over their front because they've been like battling with these giant squid in the night. But whilst they're down there, they've left all their babies at the surface with a babysitter. So they, you know, they're gentle giants, but they're also epic warriors. And I just think they're really cool. And their clicks and their sonar clicks are so loud that they can burst your eardrums or even vibrate your body to death.
Oh my god!
But they're not a threat to humans.
I'm sorry. What was that last one?
Their sonar clicks are so loud that they can vibrate your body to death. If you're kind of like directly in front of it in the water, and it would, and it sonars you, but it wouldn't do that because it could see you with its eyes. So
I knew there was a reason that I'm not a good swimmer, so I avoid being now you're vibrated not gonna swim ever to again. Death. Vibrated to death. That's awesome and horrifying.
Yeah, I just think they're cool. They're so cool. They look like aliens.
Yeah,
just big. They got big heads and little jaw. That like.
Beskar, what is your?
I don't even know now.
Yeah, you can't. You got a high bar to raise.
I don't know.
You love the Maui dolphin.
You're not wrong. Yeah. I always have to say Octopi because I think that they will take us over at one point. So I got to make sure I stay in good relation with them. So that exactly. Don't tell. No, I mean, they're so cool. They're really neat to watch. I mean, the fact that they can do what they do with what they have is absolutely mind blowing.
They say they've got almost like brain like nerve clusters in each limb. So each limb has its own independence.
That's
so they're like semi in control of their own legs. And
cool. No, that like literally, like, you know, you always make the joke like, oh, I don't know what this hand's doing. They might not actually, because it might be thinking for itself. But yeah, no, I definitely say Octopi. This sunfish thing, I also kind of want to get in its good graces because
it looks terrifying.
I see some
pictures. Oh no, they're so divers sweet.
Next to them.
I went on a whale watching trip in the south of England a few years ago, and one of the things we saw was a sunfish, and we were on this sailed catamaran, so there was no engine noise so that it could be as quiet for the marine life as possible. So we were just like cruising quietly across the water, and this sunfish came along, and he was obviously being very territorial because he came over and he just like used his little mouth to spit water at us, like, get out of here, get away. And he was just like shooting little spouts of water at us, and I was just like, you're my new favorite.
That's amazing.
I can get behind that.
That's another thing I learned with the event, that sound and noise pollution affects ocean animals.
So what you're saying is the sunfish is kind of like the ocean variant of like a llama, you know, to protect. That one was spitting to protect.
Maybe.
what's your favorite?
Cthulhu. You know. See, only 80% of the ocean hasn't been discovered. It's there now. Orcas are up there, I think, if you count penguins. But I think I fell in love with orcas now that I'm fundraising for WDC because they're just really gentle, amazing, cute creatures. I love them.
So, they have a dark side too, though, orcas.
Yeah.
Like, they sink ships now. They're very clever. They play with their food, and the way they hunt is scary.
That's horrifying.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We won't catch up with you more than I already have. Thank you so much for all your time. Please check out Sally. Check out Will, WDC, Whale and Dolphin Conservation, and then Games for Waves community. It's a great community. I love streaming for you guys, to be frank, as well as course. And thank you, Beskar Snake. Thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. And
no worries. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, and have a good day. Bye, everybody. Bye.
Bye.